The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
It's a very cold and frosty Sunday morning, not just in Shasta County, but across the country. Bob, good morning.
Yes, that sound you hear is me blowing on my fingers.
Bob's got icicles dripping off his ears and the tip of your nose, I might add. Yes.
But we have a nice warm studio.
We do. I walked in and I thought, oh, this is awesome. So you're joining We the People Radio. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. The call-in number is 530-605-4567. And just at the tip of my tongue was my own phone number, and I caught myself before I spit it out there. You know, I did that one time. I gave out my number on the air, and somebody called me. No, I gave out this phone number personally, and somebody called here and left a message for me. So, you know, when you go into auto drive, you just kind of, you don't even know what you're saying sometimes. Hey, Bob, what's that little camera up there?
Mr. Belangi, Bad Bob, says this camera is not streaming. This is only a test until further notice.
Okay, so if I wave at it. Oh, I'm waving and I'm seeing my hand. Okay.
Yes, you can flip it off. You can do whatever you like. Nobody will see it.
Well, you know, the beauty of radio sometimes is a blessing because you don't see anything.
True.
Not a bad thing.
I think the end game here is that we are going to be streaming video online on our website eventually.
So. Awesome. Awesome. Good. Well, aren't you fancy?
Savings time again?
Good morning, Aaron. All right.
Jump on in.
We have stools.
Yeah, we just got here, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Hi, kids.
Isn't it nice in here?
Yes. Yes, it's nice and cold. Right up my alley.
Yeah, it's...
How frozen was your car?
No, my car was good. I was loitering walking the dog because I love the cold.
Aww,
I love the cold. Yesterday, I think snow. We walked for like an hour yesterday
morning.
I think
everybody's really enjoying this.
I never get up in the morning. Well, I mean, I do, obviously, but that's kind of a ridiculous statement, actually. But keep talking. Talk amongst yourselves. Is that the signal? No, I do. You know, I get up in the morning, but it's not my favorite. But I'll tell you what, when there was snow on the ground, it's like, ooh, ooh, I gotta get up. I walked all over my neighborhood yesterday. It was did you guys notice all the tracks? Did you guys have funny tracks in your neighborhood?
Like,
did you ever talk about this?
Like deer tracks? What?
No. Like tracks.
Military
that,
vehicles?
No. Good one though. No, the one like where the on ramp is, like near our house, where it's a pretty, you know, it's not a 90-degree turn, but it's a fairly sharp corner. And enough people miscalculated that there were a lot of skid marks, like right to the edge of the hill that goes down to. Yeah, and nice. It was. You could just see from the tracks that there was some, you know, little heart attack going on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was something in the newspaper about the fact that the police were letting everybody know that they weren't even going to bother with any fender benders unless there were serious injuries. So if you have a fender bender and you took the icy road too fast, tough luck.
Well, I saw the sheriff yesterday and I said, so how much fun was last night? He goes, oh, man.
Yeah, it's really funny. The first snow, the first rain, people are, it just cracks me up. Like, okay, you can't drive like it's 70 degrees.
Yeah, but you
out.
Also can't drive like you're driving 20 miles an hour either.
Yeah.
I mean, that's equally difficult. But my neighbors down the street obviously had never built a snowman. So they, like yesterday morning, that was part of my fun, right? Going around just seeing what happened, you know, in the night.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bunched up all the snow. They made like a big pile right in the middle of their driveway, like by the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And then they put two balls on top for the snowman. They gave him these little stick arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing that's funny is no one has carrots anymore.
Yeah.
Remember in the old days we used to have carrots with a long pointy nose? So he had like a baby carrot nose.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Which was funny. And two, whatever they were, like walnuts or something for the eyes. But in the night, they neglected to note if you don't make a good base, the weight of the snow that continuously falls, right? So the snowman was leaned over. When you saw him from down the street, it looked like he was going, ah! His little arms were like straight out, and his nose was about 10 inches from the ground.
It reminds me of a comic that I saw on Facebook this week that showed somebody made a snowman, and the snowman's at the grocery store in the produce department.
Oh, I saw that.
And he's got no nose, and he's standing in front of the carrots, and the caption is, "The snowman's picking his nose." I thought that was great.
I saw that. I thought that was super funny. Well, this morning I go, right, to check on the snowman, and, well, you know, my normal walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they also neglected to note, if you build it right behind your car, you're going to have to run it over. So today he had, like, a tire track right through the middle of him. I thought, well, those guys learned a lot this year. It was pretty funny.
That's great.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm sorry. I was super tardy.
Well.
I had to dress up this morning. And it's amazing how much more time it takes when you have to put on, like.
When you have to look nice.
You have to put on slacks. And
when you have to pretend that you're not on radio.
Blah, blah, blah. So anyway.
We don't normally give current temperatures on this program since it's
Are you going to say, oh, here's the snowman.
Podcast, but just FYI, it's currently 25 degrees in Reading, and according to the Weather Channel, it feels like it's 14 outside with the chill factor.
There's a picture of the snowman. What do you think? As described?
And to everybody listening, what do you think of it?
Well, I think you should have Robert put it on
We should have Robert
website.
Put it on the website, because it's really funny. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut. I've seen a lot of snowmen. I like my snowmen. And,
that's hilarious.
That one was just...
Yeah, it was funny. It was really fun to drive around yesterday and see all the snowmen that people bought. I mean, built. Because they're not used to it
here. This is like a show in 2020, you know, 2050. You know, look at all the snowmen people bought. They have stores for them then. I've obviously had too much coffee already.
Yeah, clearly.
I'm like, brrr. All right, sorry about that for all those people who always say, she talks too fast. So I talk slower and I use a goofy accent. I'm sure that's helpful.
Nice.
Well, so, Professor Thies, you guys fired up about this?
Yes.
He is going to be loads of fun. Really interesting guy. I was looking at Twitter, which normally seems, I know a lot of people think that's a waste of time, but do you use Twitter?
I don't. Only because I don't think I can take one more password.
You could always double up, I mean, and then we could hack you easier.
Yeah, there you go.
Just have the NSA keep track of it for you.
Okay.
Tell. Send them a little email. Hey, NSA, can you log me into my Twitter account?
Yeah, guys, pick up on that, would you?
Yeah, we want you to control the passwords. Everybody else just had a heart attack and died online.
Yeah.
They're like, what? Okay, we're kidding. That was kidding. Twitter is, I guess I don't talk about it much because a lot of people don't use it. But if you have a smartphone and, you know, you load the, make sure you load the version for your phone. Otherwise, it'll suck your battery dry in a matter of minutes. But, you know, it's 140 characters maximum for every post. So you don't have to read long, drawn-out emails, you know?
You have to get right to the point.
Exactly. Well, and I do like following Twitter feeds at, city council meetings and things like that.
No, that was...
He's like, you have to get right to the point. I'm like, was that your, like, Twitter post for the day, huh?
I was.
I know.
I was being supportive of you. I would.
And of course, I turned it into something bad.
I would pay good money to read your tweets.
It was pretty well. Actually, it was funny because healthcare.gov
hashtag sarcasm.
Yeah, hashtag healthcare.gov. I got to play footsie with the exchange for the last 2 days.
Oh, you did?
Yes. You know, and I know what exchange means now. It means that you take your formerly. Fairly deep vocabulary, and you turn it into a torrent of swearing, and your glib, sunny outlook on life, and turn it into something that resembles that guy on Allstate, you know, mayhem guy.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking of new commercials that they could make. Frustrating, just frustrating.
And this is cover California for you?
No, I was in the other... Back there. Anyway.
Oh, okay. You're in the Washington, D.C.
D.C. HealthLink. And then you call, and you get a different answer when you call. That was awesome after, you know, you wait on hold for 90 minutes.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it was super awesome. 2 days lost. You know, I did other things in the meantime, but, you know, meanwhile, you were seething, you know. So, healthcare.gov had a post on there that something about the website, and I made a crack about it. They said they found 400 errors, but or fixed 400 errors. But while they fixed 400 errors on their site, they found 1,600 more.
Jeez.
And this was posted by DC HealthLink. I'm thinking, like,
wow.
Do we really need to know that?
And they're admitting
it? So we can get madder?
Yeah.
So I replied back, with some snarky response. Mm-hmm. And they replied back.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, that kind of freaks me out, actually.
Wow.
I want to delete my post.
But you can't,
Aaron's
can
in
you?
A Twitter war with Obamacare.
I always tweet under We the People Talk.
Yeah.
That's what I called our, thing, because I couldn't fit We the People Radio. It was one character too many. So I put We the People Talk, and, We the People Talk. We're talking to the healthcare.gov site on Twitter.
Wow.
But, I learn a lot of stuff. People are like, mm-hmm. for God's sake, get to the point. I'm so sorry for all of you who find that frustrating. not really, though. You can tweet me. I was reading all these...
What's your Twitter address?
The We the People Talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, I was going through looking at all these different things, and I saw this this article, and you can click on the link that takes you to the whole mm-hmm. article or not. And a guy sounded interesting, so I click on this thing, and I'm reading this article from the Heartland Institute, and I thought, hey, this guy's got a lot of good ideas. And I started looking at his other articles, and I thought, I wonder if I could find this guy. He'd be fun for the radio. Clicked on it. There was his picture and his phone number.
Wow, just like that. Sounds like you.
So it was kind of like, well, maybe I'll get lucky. So I call the phone number. He goes, hello, Professor Thies. I was like, well, there is a God, and he loves me. I can't get health care, but I can get Professor Thies. So everybody else who doesn't care if I get health care, you see it's working out for you. I'd be curious to know how many people have experienced my fun of late. I was talking to a girl at Black Bear Diner last mm-hmm. night. And super frustrated. She mm-hmm. has always had a policy. She has some family. They have issues with their knees and stuff. And like knee replacement at age 15
Ooh.
Type of issue.
Okay.
So her folks have bought all of them policies mm-hmm. that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they weren't covered on their folks, they had a policy. But hers went from $90-something dollars to almost $400.
Wow.
So now she's looking
That's
at being
crazy.
Uninsured.
Yeah.
She works at Black Bear, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
And because of Obamacare, they're all working 25 hours. Not all, but.
Yeah. Well, and many. The truth about Obamacare is that it's insured the uninsured and uninsured the insured. And I was reading this week for everybody in California that's going to end up on the exchange. Understand that the exchange is nothing more than an expansion of the existing Medicaid system. So you're not going to get quality health care. Medicaid never was. And they're fudging with the numbers on how many of California's licensed physicians are actually going to participate in the exchange. 70% of them are not going to be there. They're not doing it because they will get no reimbursement. I mean, they'll get $24
sure.
for an office visit, 24 bucks.
I thought 24 was Medicare and 6 was Medicaid. It's really low. It's crazy low.
And why would they do that? So you're going to have an existing Medicaid system that's going to expand, which means that in order to afford to provide medical care to the expansion, they're going to have to reimburse the doctors less and less. And why would they do it?
Again, on Twitter, I kept seeing similar posts that mm-hmm. 70% of the doctors are just mm-hmm. saying no.
They're not going to do it.
Interestingly enough, I was looking at all these different plans. I had a Blue Cross Blue Shield book because that's basically what we have here.
Yeah.
In the non-HMO universe
right.
of our rural part of the state, which is fine. I'm going through these plans, and as I spent two days looking and talking to other mm-hmm. coworkers and trying to sort the stuff out and figure out how much they were going to cost and all that, noticed that non-network doctors, okay, so all the guys who aren't part of this,
right.
this network,
mm-hmm.
which is all the guys you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
It was deductible plus. Now, these deductibles are like $1,500, $3,000
mm-hmm.
For us, it's like $3,000. So you've got to cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a $50 copay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you've got to
right.
go out of pocket first part of the year. Well, how long is it going to take you to make that up on office? You're not
yeah.
going to do that on office visits.
Right.
It's for something big. Fine. But I looked at it. Now, how many times, you might cut yourself? Now, your doctor could stitch you up. He can do stuff like that, or
yeah,
she can
sure.
do that in their office, right?
Sure.
Interesting. If you went to a clinic, okay?
Like a walk-in clinic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you, urgent care.
There you go.
If you went to an urgent care, it was $50. No deductible. So you didn't have to have met your deductible, just $50.
Oh.
And if you went to the emergency room, it was $200.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no deductible.
Okay.
So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I thought, huh, do you go to your doctor and potentially, I don't know how much it costs to do whatever the, some kind of little surgery-ish thing in their office. Maybe it's $500. Well, you're better off going to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought they were trying to avoid that.
Yes, exactly.
I thought the point was that you didn't overcrowd the emergency room.
Well, I started noticing that, and so I flipped all the different plans, and it was like, wait a second.
See, and I'm thinking that what they're probably trying to do is run some of these doctors out of business.
Yeah,
I mean, that sounds a little eerie, but, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, they want them to be hospitalists.
Yeah.
So they want them to
be
urgent care. They want the whole place to be like urgent care. So you no longer have a primary physician.
Exactly.
You go to...
Take a number, like I do at the meat market. Take a number and wait for them to call your number.
You couldn't pick deli, you had to pick meat market. For all those of you who were like, what the hell, meat market?
For all of those that use R&R Meats in Reading, you know what I'm talking about.
I just said hello. Bob's on the phone. He didn't hear me.
Yeah, I didn't push the button.
I know. Our dad is not looking now.
So, yeah, it's, you know, and I think that's the crazy thing is that as this thing unfolds, people are becoming extremely shocked.
Yeah, I started looking at that and I thought, so much for alleviating the problems in the emergency room. It was actually funneling people to urgent care
in the emergency room. Well, and here's the thing. Okay, I broke my foot a couple of years ago, as you remember, and it was on a Sunday and I went to an urgent care clinic, and what they did there to deal with my broken foot would have ultimately resulted in it not healing properly. So I went to an ortho a couple of days later and had it cast correctly. And to this day, you would never know that I had broken my foot. I've never had any repercussions. No, you know, there's no indication at all that I did. But if I had just gone to the urgent care and hadn't gone anywhere else, it would not have healed properly. So that's what you're looking at. You're not going to be looking at the care.
Well, and that's... as people start comparing, I mean, it's the cost and everything else. All right, I guess we better take a really swift break because we have Dr. Thies on the phone.
He is standing by.
So we want to talk to him. And we've been goofing off. Sorry. We got snow out here. He lives in Virginia. He's like, whatever.
The first thing he said when I spoke to him, he says, we're having a winter wonderland here. And like, an amazing coincidence.
We did too, but it was noteworthy for us.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio here on a sunny Sunday morning in Northern California. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with you.
What shall we do about them?
We're back. We the People Radio. We've chit-chatted away our first half hour. Hope you got something out of it.
Sorry about that. Tardiness makes us crazy.
We're going to be talking about redistributing the poverty because we're going to turn the tables on redistributing the wealth. We're going to be talking with Professor Thies, Dr. Clifford Thies. Okay. And he is the Eldon R. Lindsay Professor of Economics and Finance at Shenandoah University. He received his Ph.D. in economics from Boston College. Professor Thies is a contributor to 6 books and an author or co-author of more than 6 dozen articles in such scholarly journals as the Independent Review, Eastern Economics Journal, Explorations in Economic History, Southern Economic Journal, Review of Quantitative Finance and Accounting, Journal of Economic History, and the list goes on and on. And today we're going to talk about how the government puts people into poverty, some people into poverty, while it takes others out, and why, what we might be able to do about it. We're going to talk about Obamacare, how an Affordable Care Act that is unaffordable to the taxpayer and to the families that are not subsidized, and is free enterprise compatible with the Love Your Neighbor as Yourself?
That was the article I saw.
Yeah.
And kind of interesting. So, and I told him he was the boss of what we talk about.
Perfect.
And for how long.
We love that.
Well, good morning. This is Clifford Thies from Winchester, Virginia.
Thank you for putting up with us for the first half hour. We like to warm people up, literally.
I did like what you said about Obamacare uninsuring the insured while attempts to insure the uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
So Obamacare redistributes the poverty with respect to health insurance, but this is the modus operandi for government, and it's what they call income security programs. They redistribute the poverty from basically those who work, whose earnings are low, taxing them and denying them benefits, and then benefiting those who basically don't work or work only part-time with income security supplements, such as the TANF, the modern word for welfare, and food stamps, and Medicaid, and housing subsidies, and Pell Grants, and so forth. And when you actually do the arithmetic of this, you find that they actually put more people into poverty than they pull out of poverty. So to fight poverty better, if you took a utilitarian approach, you'd just shut it all down. However, I do think we can be better than that. And I think this is also related to the Obamacare mess, in that President Obama promised that if you like your health care, you can keep your health care, so that the extension of health insurance to the uninsured would not disrupt people who had some arrangement to provide for health security. And I think that's what people presumed with respect to our anti-poverty programs, that they would not degrade the conditions of the working poor, but would address those who were in need of some help.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really is opposed to helping people. The problem is now they're not going to be able to help them at all.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think that good intentions are not enough. I think you have to have a hard-nosed approach to these subjects, that you may be informed by your heart that you want to love your neighbor as yourself, that you want to address those who are in need. I mean, it might, for the grace of God, be me. But you want to do this in a way that is actually effective. And in economics, we are kind of the science of unintended consequences. We don't believe that everything you do that seems to be good and gives you maybe even an immediate feedback of, well, this is good, actually has good consequences in the long run. In fact, that's how we approach the concept of ethical or moral behavior. We say, identify those things that feel good in the immediate sense, that aren't good in the longer run, and discipline yourself to what is good in the long run. Political economy extrapolates to the nation what morality is for the individual. So most of the things in life where we fall short on the moral agenda are things where we're not intending evil, but we're lacking in information or in self-control.
Yeah, the article that you put in earlier, I don't know if it was this week, it was when I read it was this week, kind of keyed off of the Pope's commentary I don't know the quote exactly, but it's something to the effect that capitalism was the new great tyranny.
Well, and let's face it, the Catholic Church and its empire has profited very well from capitalism.
Well, this Pope comes from Argentina. Argentina has had a Peronist government, or the government of Juan Perón, Peronist government, since the 1930s. Going back to then, the Catholic approach expressed in Argentina with Perón, in Spain with General Franco, and in Italy with Mussolini, was to propose a pretty big government, not big like socialism, but sort of halfway, medium-sized government. And so, yes, Catholics will say we're not big government church. We're not a big government church. We are opposed to socialism, but we're for this fascist form of government. Now, that word has gone out of, you know, you can't use that word. The word has so many connotations today. And so I don't know what word to use, actually, to describe this medium-sized government of that continues in Argentina with the Peronist party still being in charge. And the Pope, when he was cardinal there, described himself as a Peronista. So now I happen to be a free market economist. So I happen to be for a small government and for a government that treats people as individuals, not as members of groups. And so we have a Pope now whose background is disjoint from the Northern European experience, from the English and the Germans and Scandinavians who have embraced liberalism, that is, treating people as individuals rather than as members of groups. And I don't know where the, I don't know if the Pope's going to clarify what he had to say about this. The prior two popes, one of which was a German pope and the other of which was a Polish pope, didn't have this problem with language. They thought like Northern Europeans and spoke that way. And I think the current pope, he's now on a bigger stage. And he has to speak to all the people of the world and in language that all the people of the world understands. And I think also, it's not really a Christian thing to name call. to call people the new form of tyranny, unless they really are. So most bad things in the world are not the result of evil intention. They're due to human weaknesses and ignorance. Yeah, there are evil people. There are Adolf Hitlers out there, okay? And if you want to call somebody that, go ahead and do that. But I would say, how about this one? Judge not, lest ye be judged. How about this one? He who calls his brother fool is guilty of murder. I think we should be very careful in the way we talk about people, especially cross cultures, and so being a Northern European, yeah, what the Pope had to say hit me wrong. On the other hand, I do have a principle by which you could justify the extension of health care to the working poor, and that principle is called less eligibility. Our working poor, the people at the margin, in between dependency and middle-class prosperity, our programs should not discriminate on behalf of the non-working poor at the expense of the working poor. So if we have Medicaid for the dependent poor, then we should have Medicaid for the working poor. And for that matter, we shouldn't pull anyone down in an effort to pull somebody up. That yin and yang thing, that's a utilitarian analysis. You know, we need to break some eggs to get to make an omelet. That's not the approach that we should be taking. We should be taking a capitalist approach, which basically is that you do no harm. If you benefit some, do no harm to others. So we should have a win-win attitude, not redistribution of the wealth. Our focus should be on expanding wealth and creating more opportunities for everyone. And also I think what we should be anxious for is for as many people as possible to come into their wonderful potential as human beings, to be productive and to stand as equals to everyone, because they are self-supporting. So that the whole issue of dividing the world into the haves and the have-nots and putting your focus on redistributing wealth tears at the brotherhood of mankind, which should be our focus. So that's what I'd say about Obamacare and the whole issue of our welfare programs.
Well, the part that I can never wrap my mind around, and I know that the chat room will be filled with people saying it's about control. I get that. But there are people who actually think that the reason people are poor is because somebody else literally
took their money.
Yeah, literally has their stuff.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's a static view of wealth. And this predated the capitalist system. Before the capitalist system, that was a true theory. There was no trend of increasing standards of living in the world. And after the bubonic plague, which wiped out one-third of the Europeans, there was less workers, and therefore their wages went up. And then, as population recovered and there was a greater supply of workers, wages went down. Pre-capitalism, everybody else out there was your enemy. With capitalism, we become complements in the process of production. Actually, everybody else and their differences makes us more productive in our work. So actually, everyone else becomes our ally. That's the attitude I like, where you view other people as making the world go round. Vive la différence. As an economist, I've always appreciated diversity. Adam Smith used the word specialization in trade. But we... with the capitalist system, we are judged by our strengths and not so much by our weaknesses, and we join into teams, either explicitly organized teams called companies or through the marketplace. We join in with others, and we bring out what is good in each of us. Very few of us have all the virtues. You know, the virtue of a soldier, which is courage, or the virtue of a religious person, which is compassion, or the virtue of a businessman, which is prudence. And we should appreciate each other's virtues, and again, not name-call people, because they have different virtues than ours. When that person comes down the hall who has all the virtues wrapped up in the one person, well, there might be such a person. I have known such people. I'm not one of them myself.
Well, there was one perfect person, but we killed him. So Obviously, we're not really good with. We don't treat perfection well.
And that's another aspect of being a Christian. We identify ourselves both with the person who was crucified and with those who crucified him. We see ourselves both as the reason why he was crucified, and on our path we seek to join with Christ, not only in his resurrection, but in his crucifixion. So, and you know, when you look back at the days of Egypt, among the Jewish listeners that you might have, on the Passover dinner, you're identifying yourself with the slaves who were employed to make the pyramids. And yet reminding yourself when comes Yom Kippur about your sins against your fellow man. So in the great religions of the world, we don't make it us them. It's all us. We're the good guys and the bad guys in the world. And mostly what we mean by bad guys is due to our shortcomings, you know, due to our ignorance and lack of self-control. There are people like Adolf Hitler. They're a very small number of people. I mean, how many do you know who are like that? Most of us are just flawed individuals. And so it's in that vein, I think, that so many people took offense at what the Pope said.
Yeah, because it kind of poked you in the chest and said, if you're trying to get anywhere, you're the reason that other people are struggling. And it's like, well... you know, so then you look, this is the time, it was just oddly timed too, because here we are in that time of year when...
Christmas shopping.
Well, and every charity in the world
is looking for donations, whether it's food or blankets or money or whatever the thing is, everybody is looking for you to be charitable right now. Well, you can't be charitable if you can't heat your house. So, you know, people are making some tough choices at this point, and that was sort of one of those... I guess we all have a little 14-year-old in us that just says, you know what? You can't boss me around.
Yeah, and also, if you pushed up against the wall like that, you're going to take care of your family first.
Sure.
If push comes to shove.
So you start stripping things from people, and at the end of the day, they don't have what they, you know, we're going to see a shift, I think, in individual giving, the ability for individuals to give.
Yeah.
The United States International Charity, non-government charity, is greater than all of the foreign aid of other governments of the world added together.
Wow.
That's who we are. At least that's who we were. Yes, we our incomes have been going down since 1999. Not just at the low end, all throughout. Every quintile or 20% group, this is how the data comes out, they have all fallen and by about 10% in each category. So we're on the road to the consequences of socialism. We've been drifting in that direction from the prior administration and under the current. And sometimes I point out these figures, you know, how big the government spending has been under the prior administration and the present, how the present administration is an acceleration of the spending of the prior one, how we had deficits and significant deficits under the prior administration and larger ones today, and wondering, you know, why is there such a disagreement among those who backed the prior administration with those who backed the current or vice versa? Is it because going faster in the same direction is that important, or are we headed in the right direction?
I think people weren't, I mean, I think we could probably cover this with all the different people that have sort of awakened to politics in the last 4 or 5 years. I think people didn't really understand what was happening before.
It was handled differently before.
Well, yeah. It wasn't quite in your face, so you didn't feel it so quickly. We need to take a really quick break, and we'll be back with Professor Thies. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM.
But if you won't say it, I can. She ain't got no business alone with that ace insurance man.
Why, just no tearing what?
People ought to keep an eye on their kids.
We're back.
There's an insurance song. Who knew?
If there's one out there, Bob will find it.
Exactly.
Did I mention that Bob is a musical savant?
Nice job, Bob.
Thank you, thank you, ladies.
Oh, except for he mutes himself.
Remember to turn the mic on. That was Bobby Gentry, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Very cool.
Okay, Professor Thies, we've got like 7 minutes here to the top of the hour, but I was just reminded about part of your article. So supplemental, the way you guys will see the link, folks at home, supplemental poverty measure shows uneven redistribution poverty government. So it's more than just redistribution of poverty. There are more factors to it. And one of the factors that I think we don't consider is that you made a note in here, that it doesn't reflect the impact of non-cash aid to low-income people, such as food stamps, housing subsidies, doesn't reflect the impact of taxes paid by low-income people. Can you talk to us about that in 6 minutes?
That's right.
We can carry
over
too.
In 1963, when the official poverty standard was adopted, these non-cash benefit plans and taxes on the workers at the lower end of the income distribution were low or non-existent. And so that wasn't important to take into account then. But today, actually, the very large redistributions are made because of those things. The Earned Income Tax Credit is the largest cash redistribution program of the federal government. Food stamps is number two, and I can go down the list from there. So if you're trying to find out who are poor by the 1963 standard, you'd want to take all these things into account. Same thing with regard to people who are working toward the low end of the income distribution. Back in 1963, the income tax didn't apply to them, and there were very few state income taxes for that matter. Other taxes that affect the poor, like property taxes and sales taxes, were low. And then with regard to Social Security tax, it came in at 3.6%. Well, all those things are a lot higher today. So when you look at people who are struggling, who are working but at the lower end of the income distribution, their net is way different from their gross as compared to 1963. So you want to look this to see how much we're taxing the working poor, to see how far we're pushing them down, as well as look at the ways we pull people up with non-cash benefits. And it turns out that we push down into poverty about as many people as we pull up out of poverty. And we would have no net harm if we just stopped all that together. And I'm not recommending that. I think we could be much smarter about this. So starting with Milton Friedman, continuing to today, conservatives have always wanted to have an income security, an approach to income security that maintained a strong incentive to work for everybody. We're supply siders and want low tax rates, not just for the rich, but also for the poor, for everybody, so that being self-responsible is always rewarded. Maybe at some point you view being self-responsible as its own reward. You know, you live longer and you're more healthy and happy in your life. And then you're making more money and you could do good things with that money. But especially for people who haven't gotten there on their journey, immediate benefit is very important. And what our system does is as you start to work, you start losing the benefits. They take away your food stamps. They take away the EITC. They take away housing vouchers. Your kids don't qualify for Pell Grants for college. And on top of that, you start to pay taxes on what you make. And now we got the Obamacare put in here, and there are these cliffs in Obamacare. And as someone named Cliff, I can appreciate things that are cliffs, where you work a little bit more and, wow, you get hit with an enormous bill because you lose your subsidy. So we should have a positive incentive to work at all points. That would enable us to take care of the disadvantaged among us and not have so many people disadvantaged among us, too.
Yeah. Well, I realize we're only, you know, we can talk about this after the news break, but how do you explain that? You're a professor, you teach people all the time. How do you get through to the folks that literally think that, or maybe, I don't know, have they just not thought it through?
Well, they think the government creates prosperity.
Yeah. And how do you turn that corner? Have you got any silver bullets over there?
I'm allowed 150 hours with my students, and I have a hard time getting it through.
Mm-hmm.
My grades, you know, run the whole gamut, and a lot of my students don't get it. I sometimes think, you know, if I had somebody else on the faculty who would reinforce what I said, it might be more persuasive.
Well,
we are going against the grain here.
And if their entire upbringing has been the opposite of what you're teaching, you know, you've got to break that down first before they can absorb what you're saying.
Yeah, I think in the end, the proof is in the pudding. The fact that the more free market oriented is a state or is a nation, that the more prosperous are its people. I think in the end, that's what's persuasive. I don't think it's a matter of how glib am I. People like Barack Obama and Ronald Reagan have the gift of charisma, and they just make people swoon. I don't have that. I'm kind of, I'm like,
you're
like
a numbers,
an engineer,
you're
or
a
an
numbers,
accountant.
Yeah, you're a numbers guy.
I'm a numbers guy. So
and facts are so not
right.
They're not very sexy.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to find another way to not say that.
Well, my presentation, when I have PowerPoint, my presentations, you mentioned sexy, my presentations aren't sexy, but they are graphic.
Oh, nice. They're not sexy, but they are graphic. Hila, are you happy now, Elizabeth?
I am. You notice how Bob changed the button, though. He moved it closer to him.
He did.
So he can hit it easier.
He knew we were going somewhere bad, and thank goodness we were at the top of the hour. Hey, we'll be back with Professor Thies. We'll be talking more about all sorts of other topics, actually. Join us on the webpage, WeThePeopleRadio.us. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM.
Shasta Redding.
We're back. Hour two. We the People Radio. We are chatting and streaming live at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Call in numbers 530-605-4567. And we are talking about the redistribution of poverty, which is a little play on wealth. And it's just...
play on wealth at my house. How about yours?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, things are just not the same. Although you do get used to it, I guess. You know, I have a question for the professor. We were talking about the statements that the Pope has recently made about capitalism. Do you have any feel, or even you, Aaron, on how, has there been any pushback from the Catholic congregation in Mass?
There's really no mechanism for that that I know of here. Professor, are you seeing any blowback online?
I have heard that... the Pope will be offering some clarifying remarks in some forum. I didn't get the idea that this was going to be written. So we'll just see this. Yes, the papal document that was released has a degree of infallibility. The Catholics have degrees of infallibility to things. So there's low levels of infallibility, high levels. This has a low level. So we'll see what the Pope comes out with.
Okay, because I guess when capitalism is attacked en masse, especially from the religious point of view, people kind of go, "What?"
Yeah.
I know. Here in any town of any size. There are really differing views, specifically in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. You'll have the one that's super pro-amnesty, that would support a more socialist view. And you'll see that there are different, like anything else, you can subscribe to, like, email newsletters and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you'll get them and you think, what the heck? Did the church go crazy? But then there's always another, there's always a whole nother thread of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right. I think this document was addressed only to Catholics. It was not addressed to the whole Christian community or, for that matter, to all people of goodwill. An encyclical is addressed, actually, to everybody of goodwill in the world. And the Pope, at that point, is seeking to express the entire Christian experience, although formally he's only the head of a particular denomination. Now, of course, that is viewed to be the correct one for people of Western Europe. Now, if you're from Eastern Europe, the Catholics will say there's another correct one. And if you're from Egypt, yet another. If you're from Asia Minor, yet another. There are equals to the Pope, but they're not in Western Europe. So we have, you know, Christianity broken into Western and Eastern Christianity. Within Western Christianity, there are the Catholics, and then there are the others. So this is only directed to Catholics. And I'm not sure what the Pope is saying. Is he saying that all Catholics are to be, Peronistas, being for a middle-sized government, not being opposed to socialism, also being opposed to a capitalistic orientation as well, being in the middle? Or is he saying that, well, Christians could be, anywhere on that spectrum? Catholics I'm not sure that's what the Pope meant to say, because I think the Pope wants the unity of the faithful and wants to find what is common to all Christians and not make Catholics so much different from that. So in according to the Catholic document with the Lutheran Church of Germany, Catholics and Lutherans agree about what is the form of, what is the basis of salvation, which is grace. Where do good works flow from? They flow from grace. They're not how we gain salvation. They're a consequence. And that those two things are the sum of the Christian belief. Everything else apparently is minor compared to that. I like that. I think I'm a Christian, following that, and I, for that matter, I think the socialists are too. I think you can be a socialist and a Christian. Mm-hmm. I think you can be a capitalist and a Christian. I'm very ecumenical.
Yeah, I agree.
Sure, and I have a question for you as a teacher, as a professor. Are you allowed to? This does affect economics, and because there are large groups of people, are you allowed to talk about this stuff in school?
Well, I just finished a block on poverty and anti-poverty programs. And so I, talk about the effects of programs. This is like an advisor. Like, you're a voter. When you go to the voting booth, you're going to pull a lever down. How could you be an informed voter? So by putting good information into the voter's mind, they can make a good decision. I'm not telling them what decision they should make. They should, let's say they decide, no, I do want redistribution of the wealth, and I kind of like the way we do this in the United States. For whatever reason, at least they know they're making an informed decision.
Sure.
I have another course that we have. It's elective in our program, called Moral Foundations of Free Enterprise. And in that course, I explore these issues, the long-run consequences of behavior, and how that gives a moral connotation to economic policy. In this view, it's not enough to have good intentions. You should be humble. You should be diligent in learning what are the consequences of policies. You see, I do think the road to hell, you've heard the expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. No, that's not correct. The road to heaven is paved with good intentions. If we're messed up in our knowledge and we think, for example, a poison is a remedy and we're poisoning each other because we care for each other when we see that we're sick and we wind up all dying, we're going to wind up in heaven. But that's not what we should do. That's kind of perverted. We should find out whether this is medicine or it's poison. And so moral behavior presumes that what feels good right now for me might not be in my best interest in the long run. So I want to find out what that is and to discipline my decision-making in line with my long-run best behavior. That's a certain approach to morality, that God is a God that wants us to live well and enjoy life, be healthy and prosperous, and His laws are oriented that way. as opposed to God presents an arbitrary set of, you know, decisions in front of us, and he makes certain decisions bad. I'll put it this way. This is what Margaret Thatcher is quoted, gives this quote in the movie about her, Iron Lady. It's not original to Margaret Thatcher, but she's the last time I heard it was from her in the movie. And she says, "We are not punished for our sins. We are punished by our sins." See, what is sinful will hurt us. All sins are victim crimes. We are the victim. Now, some sins, other people are also victims. Like when we murder somebody, that creates an innocent person to be a victim. But we are condemned by our own sins.
Sure. And do you find that, I guess it seems these days that discussing political questions, which are our social policies and our government policies and our tax policies and all those things, and casting those in the light of morality, there seems to be a really distinct push to stop doing that. That's wrong, that we've somehow imposed religion on people.
Mm-hmm.
But our morality exists outside of religion, and I think it's cool that you're exposing college-age kids to that type of decision-making, because that's really where the decision should be made.
Yes, actually, the course is run on a seminar basis. I do take the first few weeks to outline the course, and then the students run the course after that. It's very seminar-oriented, and so you could call it a discussion course rather than a lecture course. Yes, I think we get into real trouble if we lose sight of morality. For example, deficit spending. We see something that we want to do. There's something wrong in the world, or something right we could make better. There's an infinite number of situations like this. We see an opportunity to do good, and we think, well, let's address that. Well, if you have a budget, you will put that priority in line with all others, and you'll have to judge which are the highest priority items and work within your resources. Now, if you don't have a budget and you just go into deficit, you'll simply run out of resources at some arbitrary point, and you'll have addressed the lesser priority items. In addition, you might run up a deficit because you're not clear that what is the cost of a deficit, that you've postponed that cost to the future, and you've put it on to innocent people, the next generation, to bear the cost of that. And then at a later time, you say, oh my goodness, now look at the situation. We have these ex-firemen and policemen of Detroit City, and their pensions are at risk. Well, how irresponsible are we that we can pretend to be stupid about all these things? So we want to inform ourselves about the consequences of our decisions, and we want to budget accordingly. So having a balanced budget, well, at least in the long run sense, at least on average balance, maybe sometimes having a deficit and then having a surplus to offset that later, that would be the ideal. That's a moral issue. The deficit is a moral issue.
Mm-hmm,
the president, when he was in the Senate and opposing a Republican president, he said it was a patriotic issue. Yes, it is, and it's more than that. It's a moral issue.
And people confuse Christianity or a belief in God with morality. I mean, certainly they can go hand in hand, but they're also two very distinctly different things. And, you know, I believe that the push to ban Christianity and religion from honest discussions is allowing no accountability.
Well, I think it's an attempt to silence the discussion of morality.
Yeah.
And not just how long is your skirt.
Which
but,
ultimately
you know.
Results in absolutely no accountability.
Yeah,
and
no, I think you're right.
And no consequences.
It's not helping us very much.
That's right. On the length of skirt issue, you know, women are very sensitive.
Did I go to Catholic school or what?
Morality with regard to sexual behavior, mm-hmm. because women bear the long-run consequences.
Literally, yeah.
Right, right. So what we mean by morality, I do believe, is finding out what actually is good and being... Now, religion, we presume religion gives you insight to this, either from special revelation or from the long history of experience of mankind that now has given us wisdom. And you could look at those two things. The Catholic Church talks about both special revelation and tradition. Now, there's a little question about those things because we live in a dynamic society, and do the new things of today, you know, question the wisdom we've received from the past. I just say, keep your eyes open. Be humble. Don't be too arrogant about your views. If you think, for example, the pill changes morality, you know, that was the 1960s. That's Austin Powers from his movie. One version of the movie, he says, you know, we didn't mean to be doing anything wrong. If we had known about these social diseases, we would have behaved differently. So I think that, you know, We should find out. It's good to question, but when you do find out that the wisdom of the past still applies, or applies in a different way, then you should go that way. We should not overthrow morality. We should test it out, if you will, from time to time, but you know, but validate it and incorporate that into our behavior.
Exactly. And so we've got to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Professor Thies. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Bob.
Perfect.
I love it. Who's cheating who?
Yeah,
who doesn't care anymore?
Oh, my God. That's like a government theme song, isn't it?
That's craziness.
That's funny.
It is. Told you, I had to listen to the music.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Professor Thies, you have you sent one of the links to one of the articles that you forwarded on was about 19th century private charity.
Yes.
I didn't get a chance to read the article. Can you give us a little... tutorial there.
Yes, in the 19th century, when the churches of the country were addressing some of the abuses of the support of the poor, in that the poor were multiplying, and we wanted to address the deserving poor, and we wanted those who should work to get to work. And this happened time and again. This would happen after a bad recession. This would happen after a war. And this often happened with the immigrants to our country who weren't, you know, in on our experiment in self-government and personal responsibility. So they adopted this principle of less eligibility, that we should never give more to the dependent poor than the working poor could afford for themselves. They also have developed a work test that everyone should work, even if they couldn't make enough money by working, and then they would be supported supplementary. They also didn't like people who couldn't take care of themselves to try to raise children. A test for you to be a good parent was you could take care of yourself, and if you couldn't, well, maybe you should put your child up for adoption. this wasn't imposed on anybody. But if they found that you were unable to take care of yourself, they would call in the police. They'd have you investigated for abuse or neglect, and they would often remove the children. By often, I don't mean majority of times or even a big percentage of the times. But they were inclined to do that because the child comes first, not the need of a parent for a child. And private charity system worked very well for about 120 years, and a couple things started to erode away. We got creeping professionalism into charity instead of it being run by church visitors.
Oh, I think also so many charities have such high administrative costs. You know, they saw an opportunity there.
That's right. I was noticing this, you know, looking at the documents that they would issue, their annual reports and so forth. Eventually became more about us professionals than about getting people on their own two feet. So for the most part, the success of private charity was in getting people to be independent. And then later it came to be professional administration of those who were dependent. Then the next thing was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back here was the Great Depression. It was just so bad that it bankrupted our private charities. The soup kitchens ran out of soup, and we had to do something. And, you know, I have a view of bend but not break. I think that in emergency situations, you can make exceptions to the rule and then try to bounce back to the rule later on. But instead, we changed the rule from a private charity system to a government welfare system. That came in with the New Deal in the 1930s. So, yeah, I think we can be informed by the 19th century experience. I don't know if we could recreate it. But the idea of less eligibility should mean that we want at least a positive incentive to work at all stages along the income distribution. And the next thing is the idea that the dependent poor can never have their children taken away from them by reason of abuse or neglect because the government is responsible, because every deficiency in that household is a responsibility for the social worker, not for that parent. I think we have to have the same standard for the dependent poor providing for the needs of the children in those households as we would have for the independent poor. I think we have to define success as independence rather than maintaining people in poverty.
Sure, because in a lot of cases, and not all, you know, that's the weird part. You know, we're always seeing articles and things about people that, you know, are using their EBT cards to go to Hawaii mm-hmm. and gamble or go to yeah. Hawaii. I don't know what they're doing. But stuff like that. And yet, I don't know about everybody else, but I know people, through work and whatnot, who are living just on the razor's edge, and they don't have any extra money.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I guess some people are better at gaming the system.
Well, and it's
interesting. And we're not set up to catch that,
I guess. I've had a lot of conversations with people that have lost their jobs, they've got kids, they're down to a one-parent income, and they're really struggling as everything continues to go up, but they can't qualify for anything. And that makes me wonder where the benefits are going. Who are they going to?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right, I think that the Democratic Party historically had the sensitivity about the lower working class. And today, the Democratic Party is out courting the dependent class. And the progressive liberals, you know, in that social genre. And there's nobody out there. The Republicans are pretty good with reflecting upper middle class, but the lower middle class, the working poor, if you will, not necessarily poor by the government's anti-poverty standard, but that range from there to about the middle, where you say, you know, they have a hard time making ends meet. No, but I don't have a sense that either of our two political parties is in touch with that part of the of our population.
Well, and if we try to do anything to be responsible with the money at all, you know, like a work requirement or
at least looking for a job requirement, that kind of thing, then you're a hater. Mm-hmm. I mean, bottom line is, you always wind up at the end of that road trying to be diligent with tax dollars, being a hater, and I don't know how we get around that. And
the
still,
anti-Santa Claus. In the holiday season, we'll say, you're the anti-Santa Claus. You're the Scrooge.
Yeah. You're the Scrooge. Well, And so there's... The bad part is, in private charities, like Elizabeth mentioned, that you had high... You know, you had potentially high overhead. But I don't think you're going to outpace the overhead of the government. I mean, those guys put the high in, high overhead.
Yeah,
that's right. I actually think that the creeping professionalism was just... one of the inevitable, you know, growing pains of any institution and would be addressed one way or the other, but then came the Great Depression. I think that we have to remember about a Scrooge. We have to remember about, you know, the tradition of putting coal in the sock, right? We think of that's a bad thing, put coal in a sock. It was wintertime, and poor people needed heat. Putting coal in the sock wasn't a bad thing. It just wasn't for immediate gratification. It helped the family out. And sometimes we have to help people out in a way that's not for immediate gratification.
Sure.
So, you know, we lose sight of a lot of these old, the wisdom of the past because we're so spoiled. I'll give another example, the carrot and the stick. Okay, we think, okay, we want the carrot and a positive incentive and a stick. You know, whack the donkey on the back.
Uh-huh.
No, the stick was to hold the carrot out in front of the donkey. It was all positive.
That's true. What did they think they do? Throw carrots out there like rose petals?
So the Pope in his exhortation was talking about the excluded, and they are hurt by the capitalist countries because of nothing. They're excluded. They're not hurt. They're not benefited. They're just left alone. That's the new level of bad. That's the different kind of reward and punishment system we have. In a capitalist system, the reward is you're not punished. Excuse me. I meant the other way around. The punishment is you're not rewarded. In other words, you lose a job. You don't have that opportunity any longer.
Sure.
You lose a friend. You know, what do you do with somebody who's just completely obnoxious? You stop being their friend. So the punishment in the capitalist free system, where our relations with each other are voluntary, the punishment is you're not rewarded. Now, in a communist system, the punishment is you're not rewarded. Excuse me, I got that wrong, didn't I? The reward is you're not punished.
We're rubbing off on you. You were perfectly fine until you met us, and now you're screwed up.
Yeah. The communist system says they can't give you a reward because that would make you unequal. The reward is they're not punishing you.
Yeah, there you
go. All that could happen is something bad. And the example of that one, since I gave an Austin Powers example before, was supposedly in a communist system, you know, it's like the bad guys in a spy movie where someone who fails is immediately executed. Anyone who's been in a business knows that's not a very good way to motivate people.
Yeah, no, and it'll get you in trouble with the law. Hey, we better take a quick break or we're going to be in trouble with our advertisers. Matt, we know you're on hold, trapped in Bella Vista, but, you know, you're just a few miles away. If you can hang with us for just a couple seconds, we'll be right back with you here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll be back with Professor Thies here at KCNR 1460 AM.
I say we stand for nothing and are all due, and the baby needs shoes, and I'm busted. Cotton is down to a quarter of a pound, but I'm busted. I got a cow that went dry, and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that gets bigger each day. The county's gonna haul my belongings away, cause I'm busted.
We're back.
Gotta love that song.
I know I do.
Hey, so we better go to Matt in Bella Vista in case Matt actually has a life.
Hey, Matt.
Hi. I just wanted to point out something to you guys. I think one of the biggest drivers of poverty right now is the government. In 2002 to now, they've tripled the regulations on small businesses. They've imposed background checks that, quite frankly, the bureaucrats themselves can't measure up to the standard that they feel we do. And they've imposed permits on everything. I mean, if you try to start a business, the first thing you got to deal with is a bunch of government in your face, up your nose, and they don't even care what the law says anymore. They just intimidate you. I mean, if you want to address poverty, we got to get the government off the back of the people so that people can work. Because when you make it impossible for people to work, you can't say that, oh, these people are lazy, oh, it's all about government dependency, because it's not. I know more people that have been driven into government dependency because the government won't let them work.
Bing, bing, bing. And you Matt know has hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, very good. And you win the prize. We don't know what it is yet, but you win it.
Yeah, you do totally win it twice.
But you know, when we look at unemployment numbers, which are completely skewed and they don't give all the facts, but they fail to take into account all of the entrepreneurs and the self-employed people that have become unemployed or very underemployed who are not eligible for unemployment. That's a whole segment of our working class that is not factored in to the numbers.
Well, the numbers are completely rigged no matter how you look at it. I mean, they only count the people drawing unemployment. I know people in Shasta County that are now on welfare that just, they've been unemployed for the last couple of years because of so many regulations have been expanded. And most people who continue to support this government, they don't seem to have any clue what the regulations are anymore or what the law is. They just assume that because it's for a good intention that there's nothing nefarious to it. And I don't see how to get past that with people anymore.
And those that have fallen off the unemployment rolls have rolled over onto disability.
Well, it's interesting, but like anything else, the perspective changes when it comes home to roost at your house.
Mm-hmm.
So look at our 20-somethings that thought Obama was great, and now they can't work a full-time job.
Yeah.
If they're hourly at all, if they're working, trying to go to school or whatever, and their student loans have gone up. The girl I was talking about whose insurance now is not $90-something dollars, it's $300-something.
Well, I've got a niece that voted for the current president probably twice, and thinking that, well, you know, the naivete of the young, and she is actually in another country. She went there to teach English and, you know, do what young people do, explore the world. Well, she's not coming back now because she quickly realized that she will not be able to afford health care here at all. So, you know, she voted for the problem and now has been faced with what the consequences of that are.
Let me comment on what Matt said about regulation.
Absolutely.
We do try to account for that. We try to estimate the cost of regulation. And the cost of regulations of the federal government onto business approximate the taxes that government takes out of the economy. So this is a very big part of the cost to doing business. We also have mandated benefits. So that if you hire somebody, you have a lot of taxes that you pay on their behalf, and now we have for people who are employed full time, you'd have to pay for their Obamacare as well. So this makes so many of our people unemployable, and it saps the entrepreneurial spirit, and it invites underground economy. And then how can you, as a legitimate business, compete with those businesses that, because of taxes and regulations, are now operating in the underground economy? So this is where we wind up. This is how we spiral into the kind of economy we think of when we think of the Latin American economies, where most of the economy is illegal, at least to some extent, avoiding taxes and avoiding regulations, and where it's kind of a game, a gamble. You make money if you're not caught, or maybe you have to give bribes when you are caught, or maybe they come down hard on you when you are caught. And this is really a terrible situation, but it seems to be where we're headed as a nation.
Is it possible for me to respond real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to go shortly after that. I would say it's an accumulative effect that isn't taken into account, because not only is the federal government squashing the people, the state and county governments are squashing the people. So it's kind of a triple effect. And I can tell you that as somebody who's read enough government regulations, a majority of the new rules being imposed have nothing to do with what they assert they're about. It's just power grabs by the government. And I'll give you an example. There's an agency called the State Community Care Licensing Agency. It solely exists to protect the elderly. Yet the regulations have gotten so bad that the people imposing the rules don't even follow them. They victimize the elderly all the time and face no consequences. It seems to be there's a targeted effort to collapse the economy by some within the bureaucratic establishment, because the only people that think the rules are legitimate are the bureaucrats who are creating paperwork to justify their jobs.
Yeah, and I can say that recently had the ability to really get some good things done to straighten out a large federal agency, and yet the whistleblower in that federal agency ultimately, who was the one who started the whole thing in the first place, when we finally got to the gates of the castle, ultimately decided that they were too afraid to lose their pension rather than do the right thing. So it's like, you know, people say, well, you know, the like Congress in particular, Congress doesn't take care of all these people. That's why Lois Lerner is still getting her pension and blah, 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 paid vacation on the back of the taxpayer. Well, you know what? I can give you, and I won't right now, but I can give you detail. That's just not always the case. You don't always know what's going on in the background, and specifically the system, especially when you incentivize people to be part of that and to be complicit in that, even if they don't agree with it, at the end of the day, they'll choose their own portion rather than to put it up for grabs to save the rest of the people. I always think of those boxes, you know, where the monkeys put their hand in and grab a hold of the banana. You don't have to catch the whole monkey in the box. You just have to get them to put their hand in, and they won't let go of the banana in order to get away. They'd rather be captured, or I guess being
so
captured.
So they can have the banana.
Yeah, it's like, right. I just watched that happen in real life, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. You know, that people would actually walk away from a moral decision for their security.
Well, we're dealing with human nature.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, so Matt, thanks a million zillion. And
yes.
you have a super day.
Thanks for calling, Matt.
And we'll...
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll listen to you guys on the radio.
Awesome. We'll do some more stuff. Right. Professor will be back in 2 minutes. We've got to take one last break here before the top of the hour. You are listening to We the People Radio. This program will also be on archive, so you can send it to friends, listen later if you missed the first part, that kind of good stuff, at wethepeopleradio.us.
this back when.
Ah, my sentiments exactly. I hate the way they've messed with the English language. You know?
And I'm sure they've messed with other languages, too. We just don't speak them.
There you go. We're fast approaching the end of our second hour.
Let me speak on the corruption issue.
Oh, sure. We love the corruption issue.
Corruption. One of the things that Ronald Reagan did when he came into his presidency is he appointed a couple whistleblowers to positions of authority in the government to address the issue of the issues of regulation and corruption, and that we do need that. This is a reform matter, simplifying the tax code, along with addressing the regulatory structures, is very important. And some of the most economically free countries in the world, like Singapore, they also have the lowest level of either hard corruption in the sense of bribes or soft corruption in the sense of this kind of really micromanaging regulations that are impossible to comply with, which causes you to have to go into underground type operations, you know, hoping you're not caught, putting business onto a risky basis with regard to the law. So we need to have this as part of our agenda. This is a harder one to identify than just the level of taxes. The complexity of taxes and regulations are just as important as the level of taxes.
Yeah, because the direction that we're headed with all this is it's putting us into a deeper hole, and it becomes it's almost like in a dream, you know, when it's just out of reach. Whatever it is, the solution is just out of reach, and then you step off that weird step and you jolt awake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we haven't jolted awake yet, but everything seems just out of reach to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a frustration. You see this in the approval rating of Congress, because the Democrats don't like the Congress and the Republicans don't either. Hence, the approval rating for Congress is sometimes in the single digits. And, you know, what is it going to take? Is it going to take a two-thirds majority in each house of the Congress so we could override a presidential veto? Or will it take a new president? Well, I don't know that we want to wait either for the next election of the Congress or the next yet, you know, longer wait for the next presidential. So I do think we want to advocate both parties in office to address some of the very most urgent matters. The one that's right before the country is Obamacare and how many people are now going to enter next year without insurance mm-hmm. for their health care, who are going to be avoiding seeing their doctor for fear of being hospitalized without insurance. There's going to be a minimum of 5 to 10 million Americans in this if we look at the private insurance market, but there could be tens of millions of Americans, even up to 100 million Americans, who are going to be in a very scary place next year. The Congress has to address this. And if the president wants to veto that, let's just see what he does.
We'll see.
Because, our country, these are our fellow citizens.
Sure.
And this is real. This is not hypothecating what might happen down the road. This is right now.
Well, at first of the year, we're going to see a lot of things come into play. Let's just say, okay, somebody does have the insurance policy. They're paying more for it, unless they're being subsidized, which means we're paying more for it, or they don't have any, or whatever the deal is. But even with the Obamacare, as far as I understand, everybody has a massive deductible. So come January, everybody's got to meet their deductible before they can see their doctor, or we're all going to go to the emergency room in urgent care. And most of us don't typically, you know, most of us who've carried an insurance policy, whether independent or through an employer, have not
you know, been using urgent care and emergency room for our regular physician stuff. So now we're all going to get to do that. In California, we have the added joy of the California Air Resources Board, who will spring into action as the California's arbitrary rules for bankruptcy.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And because now the new regulations on trucks, they've just said, no, we're not going to delay
that. They're not bending.
So the price of goods and services is going to go through the roof. So people that are living on the edge now can't afford that either.
Well, and even the trucks that are coming from out of state won't come into California.
No, so we've got to have these unloading centers or drop-off mm-hmm. or whatever. So all this stupid stuff is going to hit first of the year. And so an extra, you know, 50, 60, 80, 100 bucks to go to the doctor is going to be a big deal for people. It's going to be eye-opener.
And this is what people find outside of this country when they retire, or like, I forget who of you mentioned, a niece who's decided to stay overseas.
Mm-hmm.
They find that for most health care procedures, paying out of pocket is affordable, and they probably have something in mind to deal with a contingency requiring hospitalization. So millions of Americans today are overseas, not coming back.
Yeah.
Thousands of them are renouncing their citizenship when the government tries to tax them, even though they're living overseas permanently. And this is the first time in our country's history that we've had people leaving this country. We still have a trickle of people coming in. We've solved most of the illegal immigration country by ruining our country, so it's not a destination of choice.
Yeah, if there's nothing to make, you can't make any money, why come here to make money, huh?
Right, right. And now it's we have more people leaving than we have coming.
Exactly.
So this is not a good scenario to be in.
Well, Professor Thies, on that unpleasant note, we want to thank you for coming on with us. I'm sure we'll do this again because there's a lot more that we could
mm-hmm,
cover.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1 minute left, and in our 1 minute, I thought we should drop the bomb on everybody and let them know that Elizabeth's moving away. I just found out half hour ago.
Well,
I knew she was moving away, but I just found out
today.
Came
up a little quicker than we thought. You know how those escrows go.
Yeah. By the way, I said, well, hey, how's the moving thing? When are you going to do it? She goes, oh, today's my last show. Yeah. So, you know, da-da-da was implied there.
This is very hard for me.
Not really. You just didn't tell anybody.
That's why.
Don't go.
Thank you. It's been a fantastic 3 years.
Please don't go. She's moving out of California. She's moving to Utah.
That's because that's where we found work.
Yeah, go figure.
Can you get me jazz tickets?
Jazz tickets.
Utah jazz tickets.
So, Professor Thies, little did we know, the whole time we were talking about regulation and the redistribution of wealth and people being forced to do things that they maybe didn't want to do, Elizabeth's leaving her entire family and moving to Utah. So, thanks a lot, everybody. We will see you next week.
Elizabeth,
except for Elizabeth.
I hope we can find a way to keep you part of this program somehow. We do have that technology, you know.
Well, we've got brains.
They got phones in Utah.
Yes, they do.
So thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. We the People Radio becomes now the Aaron and Mystery Guest show.
Aaron and Bill.
With Bob. Thanks, Professor.
Hey, bye-bye.
KCNR Shasta Redding.